This is DMOU, Destination Marketing Organization University, the DMO Sector's podcast, and I'm your host, Bill Geist. DMOU is where you hear the best and the brightest in the destination marketing space, sharing innovative and compelling stories to inspire you to take your destination and organization to the next level. The format for DMOU is elegantly simple. It's three questions and a bonus round. And today's episode is sponsored by our friends at CFO by Design, a firm focused on developing DMO excellence. And that means the numbers are just the beginning. As a full-service executive support firm, Julie Hart and her team provide the foundation and accountability needed to build strongly aligned DMOs and successful leaders. Don't take it from me. Go to CFObydesigntx.com and click on the clients button for a sample of the rave reviews for one of the few firms out there that lives up to the phrase rock stars. That's CFO by Design. And now it's on to our show. Like saying Cher, Elvis, Madonna, or Usher, some people are recognizable with just a single name and need no introduction. In the world of destination leadership, Mora needs no introduction, but you're going to get one anyway. A 32-year veteran of the Irving CVB, Mora Gast was named executive director in October of 2003. She led the team that delivered the on-time, under-budget, and architecturally stunning Irving Convention Center at Las Colinas. And she oversights its day-to-day operations, which hosted 220 events in fiscal year 22-23. The second anchor of Irving's visitor district, the Toyota Music Factory, includes the Live Nation Pavilion and the Alamo Drafthouse Theater, as well as a dozen other restaurants, and the third and final anchor, the 350-room Westin Irving Convention Center Hotel, opened in March 2019. Mora is a former chair of Destinations International and recently completed a three-year term as the first chair of the Certified Destination Management Executive Program Board, where she championed and led the debut of the program's first elective in economic development. She continues to serve on that board and is part of its faculty. She also recently completed a second tour of duty on the Destination Marketing Accreditation Board, the DMAP board, including chairing it from 2020 to 2022. She's earned the designation FCDME, the highest in our sector. On the industry's behalf, she's worked to weave economic development strategy with community planning tenets, along with solid destination sales and marketing in order to enhance the standing of CVBs and DMOs in their communities. Mora's building blocks, I call them the circle of life, the build a place where people want to visit, has been used by many to build the case for support and investment in destination development and the should-be-vital role of tourism in any community's economic health strategies. Mora has been named a Meetings Trendsetter by Meetings Focus magazine and a Top 25 Extraordinary Mind by HSMAI. Before joining the hospitality industry, Mora spent time in the retail and newspaper worlds in a variety of sales, marketing, and event management roles. She's also a recovering meeting professional and a proud Air Force brat and a graduate of St. Mary's University in San Antonio. Mora Gast, welcome back to DMOU.
Whoop, whoop. Glad to be here. Good morning. Happy day.
Yeah. First off, if you ever grow weary of this DMO gig that you are so entwined with, you absolutely have a place as Grand Madam Mora MC in the house.
Oh, nice. I like it. I like it.
Your role as Master of Ceremonies for the Board Leadership for Destination Symposium was simply fabulous. And we love how you engage our audiences of DMO board leaders and CEOs at that event.
Thank you. It was so much fun and so great to see that room so full again with such a great mix of people. It was cool stuff.
Yeah, and we're going to circle around and talk about some of those experiences a little later on in this show. But first off, We're coming up on a pretty significant anniversary this summer. It was 15 years ago in July in Atlanta as you closed out your year as chair of what is now known as Destinations International that you said these words.
If we build a place where people want to visit, we will build a place where people want to live. And if we build a place where people want to live, we will build a place where people want to work. And if we build a place where people want to work, we will build a place where business has to be. And if we build a place where business has to be, we'll be back to building a place that people have to visit. It all starts with a visit, and that visit doesn't happen without us.
So how did those building blocks, the circle of life, come to be? Why those words? And why in that order?
Yeah, and I can't believe it's 15 years. So thank you for being the archive master for that, because I just, you know, it's possible that it was that long ago. Obviously, it's for real that it was long ago. And some days it feels like yesterday. And sometimes 15 years doesn't seem long enough. But it was something that probably until I walked up to the microphone that day, I was still tweaking the notes in the background, didn't have the benefit of a confidence screen, was working off my paper, which, as you all know, is my preferred way of working, but I was still twisting and tweaking. Part of it started with our colleague Dale Lockett, who had asked me to chair the future study that we had done in the mid-2000s. That kind of led into my term with the officers with then DMAI. But just kind of going through that process, and at the same time, the Bill Pieper, Bob Ford book on managing destination marketing organizations had come out, and that was the first time I'd kind of seen really all the history of how we came to be put together in one place, and looking at what the future study was saying and kind of working through that, I just kept coming back to this whole thing. I was very involved with Destination Counselors International and working with them, particularly because of our role working with our economic development partners here in the community, but just kind of all of those things milling about and kind of wrapping my head around it. And then just that realization, especially because we were at, you know, once again, falling off a cliff from an industry perspective with the economy, you know, just saying, okay, here we go again.
Right.
And with all of that on my mind, really understanding the panic of 1893 and how we came to be, and just kind of this really important history of, you know, if we don't know it, we're condemned to repeat it kind of stuff, but also why we were created, you know, especially on, you know, the CVB, the structured side of getting more people here to our communities in groups and saving our communities based on other people's spending. I mean, that's what we were doing. We were created to get our communities out of a bad economy, and we left that, we walked away from that. And I think over the years and over the decades, especially when the whole real estate market changed, I think in the 80s and 90s, and hotels, you know, hotel management or hotel investment stopped being about hospitality and became about real estate asset management. And that just by nature changed our jobs on the destination side of things, because now these people from whom we receive funding they collect on our behalf have a very different set of standards that they're being measured by. And I do think that's kind of where we as an industry lost our way for a little bit, that we got so caught up in making sure our hotel real estate assets were performing to their owners' bottom line benefit, we just started talking about that stuff and only that stuff and forgetting who we are, what we do, and why it matters. So it was all of that swirling around in my brain, all of it desperate to have some kind of closing, something that might have benefit, meaning the thespian in me trying to figure out some way to wrap up the year that had been and do something with it. And, you know, I just kept tweaking and tweaking and tweaking. And that's how it came to be in the order it is around the wheel, around the circle of life, but then not leaving out the important part in the middle, which is it all starts with the visit, and the visit starts with us, because that's how our communities connect the dots to us.
Right.
You know, it's one thing to say it's because of the visit, but if we don't do the inviting, how does the visit happen? And that's why I'm so determined to make sure that those last two pieces are there. It all starts with the visit, and the visit starts with us. I think those are the two most important things of that whole circle.
For me, it was one of those moments that it really crystallized, because, you know, when I travel, and I don't think that I'm that different from others. I mean, unless you're really married to the land that your house is on, like a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all imagine ourselves when we travel as, could I do it here? Could I take that building and make something out of it? Could I become, you know, more successful or more fulfilled in this community than I am in mine? And it is that inspiration that travel brings to us, where you visit, then you consider, would I live there? And then would you consider working there? And I mean, it just made such perfect sense. But I want to go back for a second And as always, you come at things at, you know, 40,000 feet. I come at things at 10,000 feet. And I look back at the 80s, you know, you said it was that changeover from hospitality to real estate asset. I also think that part of what happened in the 80s is that really was the decade where room tax became ubiquitous in this country. And because we were taxing hotels, most governments in that era put hoteliers on the board of directors of these new DMOs.
Absolutely.
And we were building the plane as we were flying it. We had no idea what we were doing. And I know that because I was doing it in the late 80s at my first DMO. I had no idea what we were supposed to be doing, but somebody said heads and beds and it sounded cute. And it's like, okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
And that was because our boards were so hotel heavy. And as we've evolved, we realize we have a much bigger mandate. And I think that your circle of life building blocks has really helped so many destinations to understand that there is a bigger role. That, yeah, we lost our way in the 80s and 90s, but let's get back on the right track.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the other things that was, and I should have given it credit, because one of the other documents that was in my brain going through all that was, this was also the time that Richard Florida and the rise of the creative class was happening.
Right.
And that was... Yep. Important pieces to me. We were still kind of DOA with the original version of our convention center, but going through that initial process, I had done a lot of reading in the development and placemaking at the library or at the bookstore, just trying to understand placemaking. And some of that led me to Richard Florida, and some of it led me all sorts of places. But it was also kind of that rise of the creative class mindset about the shift from our generation who went where the jobs were to up and coming generations who find a place they want to live, and then they'll see what there is that they can make a living at. And that was part of what went into part of the order of that circle. You know, if we don't build a place where people want to live, then the jobs aren't going to follow those people there, you know? So, and especially just with that complete flip on how important workforce, you know, recruitment and retention is. And it's still there, even right. though, you know, now in this hybrid work world, it's different, but it is still there. You know, you are seeing companies calling people back to within X miles or X hours commute of the home base, you know, and people that may have to think about moving or aren't going to think about moving, they got to be in a place they want to be. So all of that kind of happened in there, but some of the order of that circle was really recognizing generational shifts on how people were thinking about working and work as a platform to living versus, or to better living, if you will, versus, you know, my generation, my parents' generation that said, you know, you work to provide food and shelter and to, you know, maybe make an immediate better life for those around you. And so you sacrifice, if you will, to for your family's benefit, and you would never think about, I can't even imagine the luxury of coming out of college and getting to be picky.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea there was such a thing as a gap year and those kinds of things, right? You got kids, so that's probably not foreign to you. But the first time I heard about that, I was like, what?
Yeah, right.
I had to go to work. I had to pay bills. I had expensive college to pay off. It's just different, but again, generationally. So generational change. So there was just a lot of stuff going on. And you hit on a lot of that too, that just finally kind of explosion of the use of hotel tax to do things in communities and hotels then asserting themselves and being inserted then into the role of communities, you know, outward facing destination organization, because it was, after all, quote unquote, their money. And it's that shift of the real estate asset business, especially in hotels. It's a 30, 60, 90 day outlook. It's not a 5 to 10 years. There's no time to say it's going to happen in 5 years. The performance needs to be there, you know, 30, 60, 90 days, then the next 30, 60, 90. It's just different.
Yeah. As the adage goes, they look at the next quarter when we're looking at the next quarter century.
There you go. Yes. Beautiful.
The two just don't mix. They right. really don't. You know, it's funny that you say that you were continuing to tweak it as you walked to the stage, because I do the same thing. Maybe that's why we're such good friends. I just had the chance a couple of weeks ago to keynote the Tennessee Tourism Blizzard Conference And it snowed while I was there. And so the blizzard thing worked. And they called me like, you know, I don't know, the Thursday before the Tuesday when I was going to go on. And they said, can you shoot us your slides so we can load them into the deck? And I go, no. I went on it too. And I was still rearranging at noon. Going, nah, this one goes here and this one goes here. And that's just who
yes,
we are, right?
Yes.
So here's my question, though, along that line. Over time, I'm sure you've gone back to that video of If You Build a Place.
And thank you, God, for being the guy who shot it, because I don't think it exists otherwise, so I could remember the order.
You know, that is funny, because that was the year that DMAI chose not to record any of the sessions. Because we're friends, and because you were, as you called it, you were stepping down from your reign of terror as the chair of DMAI, I thought that you'd like to have this as a memento. So I brought my my camcorder. Right, because there weren't iPhones.
An extra piece of luggage.
And a tripod, and I sat it up, and I just shot your closing comments. And then, wow, I mean, you know, lightning in a bottle, right? But anyway, I'm sure you've played around with those evolutions of the building blocks. You say that one of those evolutions is, quote, snarky but pretty darned effective, and the other offers new alliterative approaches. But you say you're not completely sold in either one. So can you share some of the thought process without kind of getting us to where you're not quite ready to go?
And I think the snarky one may have come out in one of our breakout sessions during the board symposium. But and again, I'm so grateful you recorded that, because it was just a moment of time. It was, like I said, me scribbling until I walked up there.
Serendipitous.
There have been many times when I have been somewhere and somebody has thrown it at me and said, hey, Maura, what's that quote you use?
Yeah, right.
And I sit there like an idiot and go, you know, it's the building blocks, while I'm scrolling on my phone trying to find the last time I had a graphic of it that I could, like the one you used, quickly refer to. And just realizing that as important and valuable as I think that circle is for what it conveys, it's a lot to say and trying to get to something more efficient and perhaps more memorizable, something that'll make a much better t-shirt.
Right.
Or, you know, that's the, I probably shouldn't do this yet, because they still need some tweaking, but I'm playing with them.
Yeah.
I'm playing with them. I'm very fond of the snarky one.
Yeah. I was doing some work actually in Texas in a pretty small town. We were working on their new strategic plan. And as part of that, to prepare them for a potential run at DMAP, we always go through mission, vision, core values, all that stuff, because you've got to do it. And I remember working with a board, and they were really struggling with mission. And I kept saying, guys, your mission statement is like four sentences long. We've got to get this down so that you can all remember it. And when you're out in public, you can, boom, you can say it. And one guy, and I do believe he had a 10-gallon hat on, one guy looked at me and he goes, I got it. I got it. Get him here. It's like, and he didn't, he meant G-I-T.
It's
he
perfect.
Meant get him
yes.
here. And it's like, damn, I can't do any better than that.
No, that pretty much sums it up. Get him here. Eat him.
Eat him.
I like it.
Okay,
eat
so him. Over the past few months, though, I have heard you test and refine another concept. And I think it is destined to be adopted as another mantra by people in our world.
Okay.
And as your co-moderator during the roundtable discussions at the Board Leadership Symposium, I heard it several times and you were testing it. And I think by the time we were done, I think you're there. Unlike your next iteration of the Circle of Life, I think this is fully baked. Share with us the newest Maura-ism.
So it kind of stems out of that know your numbers. And what spurred it, especially in those moments, was that dynamic panel of mayors, which was amazing, but it also, you know, left me standing with a couple of OS were in trouble when all three agreed that they're going to look and continue to look at visitor revenues as a source of solving workforce housing and homelessness issues in their communities. And that's terrifying on any number of levels, but You know, when you have three very sophisticated mayors, very intelligent mayors, mayors who clearly know how important the tourism visitor economy is to their community's bottom line, all saying, you know, we see you all as part of the solution financially to solving these challenges that are happening around the country relative to workforce housing, relative to homelessness, and all of these things. And we've seen this play out in a lot of places. Part of that conversation, and I think it's where our board members are best based to tee it up with, is just that, you know, in every community or in many communities, there's a ton of bonds that have been sold with visitor revenues backing them up to build things, whether it's a convention center, a performance arena, a stadium, a ballpark, a river market, whatever. In most of those types of projects, the communities have sold municipal bonds of some kind, pledged with perhaps hotel occupancy taxes, car rental taxes, perhaps ticket taxes, or a combination of all of the above. But when those communities pledge with those revenues, because those revenues are incredibly wobbly, in order to get the rating agencies to buy into the community issuing that debt, they got to back it up with steady money. And that steady money is property taxes, ad valorem taxes. And so, you know, here in our case in Irving, we've got $300 million of debt tied to visitor taxes, and the city had to pledge its general fund revenues, its ad valorem taxes, if you will, to back up that debt in case hotel taxes don't deliver. And what that means is economic downturn, COVID, when those revenues don't hit the mortgage payment, if you will, that's due that year, the city has to take funds, is morally obligated, and that's not swear like a Boy Scout morally obligated. It really is, unless the city's going to declare bankruptcy, morally obligated to pay that bill with another source of revenues. And that means likely, unless you're in one of those communities where nobody minds higher taxes, that means taking away from something else. So you're going to take away from potholes or rec center hours or a new library in order to pay this debt because visitor revenues weren't there.
Or you're going to raise taxes, right?
Right. So I mean, you're going to have to raise choices. Taxes to do those fundamentals. You can either cut services or raise taxes because you pledged that you would do that when you issued this debt. And so every time an elected official says, we're going to take the money from you, destination organization, and you can go to one less trade show or run one less ad or cut one less market out of your target markets where you're promoting or advertising or doing whatever you're doing, then the conversation that has to come back from our board members, because it's career ending if it comes back from us, is simply, we want to be part of the solution, but what is the city's plan for when we decline in visitation from our number one feeder market, because that's the most expensive one, or whatever. But what's the city's plan to provide the revenues then needed to pay the mortgage on the bonds? And I say mortgage just because that's easy. But when you got a $6 or $8 or $12 or $20 million a year debt service payment due over 30 years of time, does taking $500,000 away from the CVB really worth it?
No.
Or a million or 5 million or whatever the number is.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of our partners, our colleagues have figured out a way to put in an incremental level of funding and we'll split the increment to solve for that problem. I almost can buy into it with workforce just because we've got people on career paths through the many workforce platforms that we have that need good housing, that we want to be able to afford to live in our communities. So I almost can get to it there with having a place to play in it, but I don't get to it with why is it only in just us? And the answer obviously is because you're not residents and you don't vote. Mm-hmm. You know, those taxes aren't coming from residents. But those residents are who are going to feel the pain when the $6 million a year that's due for the debt didn't come in and it only came in at three. And now $3 million of Sunday hours at rec centers have to be closed, or an after-school program, or senior lunch program, or whatever has to be cut because that money didn't show up.
And that's it, isn't it? It always comes down to, this is the easiest tax.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, we have to at least say, it's easy, but let's understand what you're talking about. You're telling us to not go to PCMA this year, or you're telling us not to go to ABA this year, where, you know, we sign contracts or we come back with leads for the next 3 to 5 to 10 years that would have been contributing to the bottom line of that mortgage payment in those future years. But because we weren't there, or we were invisible, or we eliminated that market segment because you chose to solve this problem with those resources instead, what is your plan, elected leaders, to fill in that revenue gap with your revenues, with general fund revenues, when the visitor revenues aren't there?
And you're right. The board has to be prepared to be the ones who step in and say that, because it's challenging. You're essentially saying to your elected officials, you're idiots, because you haven't figured this out.
You're not looking long term.
We're trying to help you out here, and you don't realize that by doing A, you're going to get Z, and you don't want Z.
Right.
And we're here to help you with that. For us to do that, in some cases, it's going to have to fall to us. I think those of us who unfortunately are saddled with weak boards. But it really shouldn't come from us, because we have to work with these elected officials on a daily basis, and challenging them that they aren't bright enough to get out of this problem is not a good look.
Right. Say, I support the need. Yeah, no, it's definitely a career limiting kind of stance to take. But we also have to be responsible to say, I get where you're coming from, you know, Mayor. I agree this is a need in our community. And I am grateful that you are looking to us to be part of the solution. But here's, as my role on the board, here's a question I have to ask, because I know this stuff. So what, you know, what happens when, because we've done this, our visitor revenues drop off? Has the city run its calculation over time of what that drop off will be? And can the city continue to cover its moral obligation when that drop off happens? Or I love the idea, you know, we've seen it here in the Irving Dallas Fort Worth area, where some of the larger scale agencies that are working towards homelessness solutions have been buying up older, more dated hotel properties and converting them to workforce housing or homeless shelter with wraparound services. And that wraparound services is really key to that,
right?
Where you've got a structure in a hotel, especially in a full service hotel setting, where you've got individual living units, potentially. You've got them efficiently structured. You've got meeting spaces that could be converted to offices for those wraparound services. You have,
or daycare,
or daycare, or both. You have all of those pieces. And I would so much rather see us being able to say, let's figure out how to take out underperforming hotels, you know, because they're older, they're lowering the flag standards with every renovation instead of raising them. How can we work in partnership with our communities to take down underperforming hotels, to look at, say, okay, well, this hotel generated only $20,000 in room taxes last year, where a newer hotel in the same market segment is generating 70, or whatever the number is, right? So can we work with you to take down that underrated property? Can we work with the owners of those properties to flip those in a friendly way, and maybe they get to the first of the line for permitting for a newer project somewhere else? What's the way that we, in our roles, can help solve the problem other than writing a check?
Yeah.
You know, because for me, I would say, oh my gosh, I have a way to contribute to this problem. I have a way to update my apartment stock, if you will, or my room unit stock versus the other, and it's a win-win. So can we look at, you know, almost the incremental gains? How do we look at something like that versus we're going to take 1% of your budget or a chunk of the TPID money or whatever it becomes? And I'm not entirely opposed to a new source of revenue being split, because it's ancillary or it's incremental. But I sure wish we could have a conversation that was much more deep and much more impactful and served the same needs and actually improved the property tax bottom line, because we get rid of underperforming hotels and we solve an issue and we do these other things. And can we take maybe those wraparound services, including entry-level roles in our industry? you know, that promise a career path. You know, if we could provide transportation and we could provide daycare, could we provide on-the-job training, apprenticeships in our restaurants, in our hotels, in our meeting venues? Because all of our industry offers career path for a lifetime. You know, so could we provide a starting step? You know, when we're all still, I think everybody's still having troubles filling jobs. They haven't all come back, not because they were all cut, but because they haven't all come back. So could we provide a series of apprenticeships that let people grow to career-long jobs, you know, lifelong careers, career-long lives, lifelong careers, whichever way that belongs, so that we're part of lots of solutions instead of just write a check or just give up some of your money?
You know, anytime I'm in a community, and I was last week, you know, you drive by this 1976 era Sheraton Conference Center, probably 260 rooms, 30,000 square feet of event space, and it has construction fencing all around it. And you just kind of go, oh. But then I find out what's going to happen, and they're going to transfer this thing into housing and into daycare and into training. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is the best possible reuse of an old hotel.
Yes.
I was elated as I heard the plans for this old Sheraton. And I think that's the future. And I think all of us in our roles need to be the person or the persons that are suggesting those, because I don't think that Joe and Jill public or Joe and Jill elected official think that way. And yet we do, and we know the best possible use of that building going forward.
Absolutely. We hear lots of conversations in this market about repurposing office buildings into really dense housing or really dense homeless services. And like, that's a horrible, I'm sorry, for me, I think that's a horrible reuse because there's no appropriate services already in place surrounding an office building. The footprint, the floor plate flat doesn't work. The amount of money it would take to convert a building full of office spaces versus a building full of hotel rooms, you know, the math is never going to work converting an office building. I mean, I guess it could if you have deep pockets and if you're going to, you know, tear up everything but the floor plate, the broad floor plate, but you're going to have to really, plumbing's going to have to go places it doesn't currently exist. I mean, just those little things, right?
Yeah.
Yes, there's electricity in every office. Yes, there's a cable drop, but there's not plumbing in every office. There's a bank where plumbing exists, and that's why restrooms and water fountains are in the same place on every floor.
Right. That's one of the issues going on in Lansing right now is there's so much office space that was state office space downtown that's not being used because state officers not coming back to work in their offices. And of course you go, well, let's flip it into residential. Well, the estimate is it's going to be $750,000 per unit to flip it. Well, that doesn't pencil.
And that's just to flip it.
Yeah. Right? And that doesn't work.
Which means somebody's going to want $1 million a unit in rent or mortgage to make money on it. And even if you're trying to use it for workforce housing, where are those people going to work if all the jobs just went away? Right? All the jobs that were downtown have left.
You don't need to be back in the office. Yeah, exactly. And obviously, we can't solve the problem, but we can certainly be part of the solution and part of the conversation. And I think that's where you're going in this.
And I think that's it. It doesn't have to be about the checkbook. Maybe there is a check that gets written, but man, a long-range, purposeful conversation about not solving the problem for the next election cycle, but solving the problem, you know, the cathedral thinking thing.
Right.
Which you're always so good about reminding us about is just that, you know, it may not happen on my watch, but if I can get the frame built or the cornerstone laid, it's going to be worth it. You know, our jobs are altruistic. You know, we do work to make our communities better and leave them in a, you know, leave it better than you found it. You said that earlier, but if we just said that, we want to have a conversation. If we did the inviting to all the homeless agencies and wraparound services in our communities and said, I want to hear everything. I want to understand all the issues. I want to know, is daycare an issue everywhere? What are the issues that are in common? And just start, you know, Venn diagramming everything. And what are the issues in common and where do they intersect and what's our role at that particular intersection? Or maybe it's a different intersection and what's our role there?
And we have that role. or at least we should recognize that that is part of our mandate going forward.
We should. I mean, it's definitely playing defense too, or maybe it's playing off, you know, it's eat or be eaten, right?
Right.
If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. It's all of those things, but we should give a care beyond our self-preservation. But what an important conversation we could be having.
So it's time for the bonus round question. And this is where we typically have some fun with our guests to close the show. But you said that you'd rather go a different direction. And since you're known as only one name, not two, I'm good with that. You qualify for changing the rules of my show.
Okay.
So at the Board Leadership for Destination Symposium, Destinations International CEO Don Welsh led a panel discussion, which you referred to earlier, with three mayors from Phoenix, Columbus, and Little Rock, who absolutely get the power of the visitor economy to drive quality of life. A number of the post-symposium surveys said it was the best session of the event. I think you agree.
Yeah.
Share with us what your prime takeaways were, other than they see the opportunity for tourism to be part of the solution in other social and civic issues. But it was bigger than that. They just saw the visitor economy as absolutely critical to quality of life. Tell me some of your best takeaways.
You had three very different markets in Columbus, Little Rock, and Phoenix. Completely different markets, completely different challenges, issues, completely different phases of their cities' lives. And yet, you know, they all saw it. I think it was the mayor of Little Rock referred to himself as the chief growth officer. And I thought that's a great perspective to have. And it's not a bad perspective for us as well. Obviously, we don't want to be stealing from our mayors, but that whole mindset of we're the chief growth officer. And he saw that across his city. You know, he talked about, he was also extraordinarily young. And when he mentioned the average age of the city council in Little Rock, I think a bunch of us just in the room went, oh my God, you know, that's 30 years younger than our respective ones. And not that ours are that old, but he's a young rock star. He talked about every flavor of the city having an opportunity to spice it up. And he was really talking about the diversity in all of our cities have the way to open things up. Their approach to allowing open containers, which, you know, in some places would just be verboten, but that thought, I think the thought in Columbus, recognizing that residents had concerns about safety and security downtown. And if residents have those concerns, that visitors are going to have those concerns. So being really purposeful and intentional about that by putting on free concerts in their downtowns to prove to their own residents that it's safe to be there, but also backing it up by putting a real-time crime center in their downtown so that if when incidents occur, as they will in communities big and small, you know, whenever you bring a bunch of people together, chances are people are going to step on each other's toes, literally or figuratively.
Yep.
They're putting product there to make sure people come down there, but they're backing it up with resource to ensure that the promise of safety and security stays. And I thought that was fabulous. I thought Mayor Kate in Phoenix, talking about her three T's, the tourism, trade, and technology. Her recommendation to all of us that when we talk to the larger community, that we have to talk about what's in it for them as residents, that we talk about we're trying to grow the pie versus dividing the same amount of pie into smaller slices. The mental health resources to policing, I know we're seeing that here in Irving, but lots of people saying that. It was the Little Rock mayor talking about quality of life and a sales tax initiative to provide for better resources for youth sports with the dual goal, those youth sports facilities, then also accommodating tournaments. So, you know, not unlike what we've seen take place in Rockford, which has been amazing, but, you know, saying that we can improve our community's quality of life by improving our quality of place. And by the way, when we do that, we get the benefit of being more attractive to visitors and being more attractive to companies and, you know, getting back into that whole circle of life thing. I also loved one of, I think it was the mayor from Little Rock again. He said the best way to unite people is either through sports, food, or entertainment, or if possible, all three. And I was like, yeah. That's kind of what we do.
All three.
Yeah. I think they all talked about us getting out of silos and that as we, you know, work with our communities, it's really important to engage with people on their efforts and their priorities, not just trying to bring them along to ours, you know. And I know we talked a lot about that in some of the breakout sessions as well, as, you know, be friends before you need friends,
right,
kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. The old Phil Craig, got to be there before you got to be there. You know, one of the things that I really picked up on was all three of them. Well, I'm sure if we were in those towns, we would experience some partisanship back and forth in the things that they do. But wow, it certainly didn't feel that way from the stage. It was that these are individuals who view their role, their very special role, as leading their communities, that it's not about partisanship. It's not about philosophies or any of that. It's about quality of life. Everything comes down to that. It should, for a mayor or a governor or any elected official. And so sadly, that's not really reality anymore. Yeah. But for these three individuals, part of me knows that we didn't record the session because we didn't want them to hold back. We wanted them to be free to say their mind. And they did. They were great.
Yeah. Yep.
But part of me then at the end went, shit.
Yes.
This is so powerful.
Yes.
I'd love to share this, but next time.
Right? Yeah. I wish we had. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember who, was it you guys that had the Uber driver that referred to Mayor Kate? I know somebody in our group was talking about that their Uber driver referred to her as Mayor Kate, the Phoenix mayor, as Mayor Kate, and our mayor. And I thought that was just fascinating that somebody really thought about it, because whatever they have seen and heard and witnessed in terms of what she's done and how she's done it, that person felt like she was representing them. And I thought that was an amazing, powerful statement about the work she's done and how she has done it.
Yeah. No, it was an amazing experience, and thank you for recounting your takeaways, because as we said, we didn't record it, and hopefully your recounting of that helps us. Maura, thank you so much for all you do for all of us, for kind of being that beacon 15 years ago this summer.
Wow.
Honestly, as I move around the country and work with my clients, there isn't a moment where I don't bring up that moment 15 years ago as the turning point. There was your circle of life in Atlanta. And then Longwoods does the study that essentially affirms that by seeing a tourism ad, you are 15-ish percent more likely to want to visit, live, go to school, and start a business in a town. And then everything from those two points of light changed for all of us. And then, of course, COVID just solidified the fact that all the old rules don't apply. And we got to get some new cool rules. Or maybe we don't do rules at all. We just do what's best for our communities, right?
Right. If we kept our communities at the center of everything we did.
Yep.
If that was just does doing this directly or indirectly today or tomorrow benefit? We just apply the rotary four-way test to everything we do.
Right.
If we do this, is the end result something better for our communities? Yeah,
that's what it is. That's why we do what we do. Again, Maura, thank you so much. Great hanging out.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you. Thanks for all you do.
You
take
bet.
Care.
And that's it for this edition of DMOU. Tell your friends and peers this is where the best and the brightest come to share their stories. It's DMOU.com. And be sure to subscribe on whatever podcast platform you use to listen to DMOU to be notified when new episodes drop. Today's episode has been brought to you by our friends at CFO by Design, a firm that is focused on developing DMO excellence, and that means the numbers are just the beginning. As a full-service executive support firm, Julie Hart and her team provide the foundation and accountability needed to build strongly aligned DMOs and successful leaders. Don't take it from me. Go to CFObydesignTX.com and click on clients for a sample of the rave reviews of one of the few firms out there that lives up to the phrase rock stars. It's CFO by Design. DMOPros.com is where you're going to find more on our services to the DMO world, plus links to past editions of the Z News, our blog, our homepage, position papers, the book Destination Leadership, the biggest DMO job board on the planet, as well as links to earlier episodes of DMOU. That's DMOPros with a Z.com. Executive producer of DMOU is Terry White, and this is a production of DMO Pros. I'm your host, Bill Geist. Until next time.